mentored by some of the best minds in entrepreneurship in the world, then you're listening to the right podcast, Ditch Digger CEO. We're going to be interviewing CEOs and founders who will be telling their amazing rags-to-riches stories. These entrepreneurs who dominate the industries they serve will be sharing the secrets to their success. We'll be talking to millionaires and billionaires, many who started with nothing. You're going to be mentored with golden nuggets of shared experiences from my guest, whose time is worth thousands and even tens of thousands of dollars per hour. I started in the paving business right out of high school, and with no college education, mentorship has been my education of choice. I started over 25 companies in the last 20 years, have generated over $1.5 billion in revenues. My guarantee is this. If you listen to Ditch Digger CEO and you want to be more successful, you will become more successful. The secrets of my success and for many of the world's greatest business leaders will be revealed. Let Ditch Digger CEO mentor you. We're here today with Scott Scully, and we're going to talk. A lot about marketing and cold calls and all that, because Scott is a champion in this space, and we're excited. Scott, thanks for being on today. We're excited to have you on Ditch Digger CEO.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, looking forward to it.
Nothing works if you can't sell, right? If you don't have a sale, you don't have an opportunity. And I got to tell you, you know what, we've had some great salespeople, and we had some great sales plans in our history, but never been a perfect science for us, right? We're more operational in our businesses, and we go after, you know, basically performing high production, high quality work. But I got to tell you, on the sales side, we're just not as focused as we could be or should be. On the marketing side, call center side, we do very little when it comes to those things. So I'm excited to have this conversation with Scott, because I think there's a lot of things I'm going to learn from this. We also know you're an entrepreneur that knows how to scale things and had some great blessings in scaling your industry. So we want to really open that up and get you talking about that stuff. So welcome on board today, Scott. And you got Chris as our producer on. Chris at the end is going to come up with some questions, you know, probably a few questions here and there during in the end. And then Chris at the end will also pull out nuggets that he feels are kind of nuggets for success that Scott Scully has been blessed to figure out. Right. You all good with that, Scotty?
Absolutely. Let's do this.
Awesome. All right. So, hey, Scott, let's go into, hey, where it all started, right? Where did your marketing passion come from? And, where did this abstract marketing company and idea come from?
Yeah. So I don't know, you know, all the way back, I guess, cliche, I was the kid mowing the lawns and painting the walls and selling gum out of lockers and pretty entrepreneurial. So I had interest at a real early age. I did not start a business right out of college. I went into a couple of marketing roles, and then probably 2.5 years out of college, I joined my friends who had started a automotive marketing business, direct marketing business here in St. Louis. And I came on in a marketing capacity. And right when I came on, the top two or three salespeople left. They tried to go into competition. And so all of a sudden, my buddies needed me to hit the road and try to save some of this business. And we did that. We saved it all, didn't lose a client. And then I find myself in sales, which I didn't necessarily think was my path. I was more of a marketing strategy guy. Became the top sales guy. And got to a point, because we were sales and account management, where I was using all my day and I was making a good amount of money, but I just literally didn't have any more time. And I sat down with the guy running the company, who's the brother of my friend, and said, "Hey, I'm your top guy. Pay me more." And he laughed and said, "No, but you're making enough. Why don't you hire somebody?" I said, "Oh, I can do that." He goes, "I don't care. It's your commission." So I hired my first guy, gave him one of my territories, you know, helped him grow, did it again, did that like 6 times. Then I ran sales,
Okay, so hold on a second. So wait, this is how old were you about this at this point, Scott?
23.
So 23 years old, you're really figuring out the value of duplication, right? How you can duplicate yourself over and over again by working with people, you know, training people to be the best they could be, right? And then setting them on their way, and then being a part of their mentoring them, guiding them, and their success was your success and your success was their success, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, you know, a lot of people get just stuck, right? Like, okay, I'm maxed. This is all I can do. And really the funny way in which that happened, I suppose it wasn't that funny at that point, but him saying no and him telling me to go spend my commission on other people because he wasn't going to kind of got me started in you know, how I can grow territories and grow people and, you know, get to bigger numbers with the power of a team, like you're saying. So I ended up, Scott.
And so often when I talk to, you know, small businesses, I'm around a lot of small businesses. I'm in an organization that national organization where small businesses are, we create a voice for them in Job Creators Network, this group I'm in. And then in my own businesses, we start up these little businesses, become bigger businesses. But what we find is existing companies that we might look at buying or friends of mine that are running businesses that want some mentorship, biggest thing they have a problem with is really getting out of their own way. And mm-hmm. and not often do they figure it out at 26 years old, as you did, that, hey, man, you can, you know, mentor somebody else, train them, right? And you know, create this expertise in somebody that can do the job maybe as well or better than you. And now they're part of your system and success happens, right? That's pretty cool. 26, you figured out, because it took me probably till closer to 40 to really figure out how to duplicate myself and really have the confidence that I can train people to be good at what I do, right? So that's awesome.
Yeah. I felt lucky because, you know, I was young I wasn't married, didn't have kids, you know, at that point. And so I just had all the time in the world to really carve my path. And so I ended up running sales. I eventually ended up being the president of that company. And then I was actually awarded 30% of that company at a Christmas party, which was awesome. So now, you know, I dream of being an entrepreneur, didn't necessarily think I was going to do that via, you know, a marketing role, then to sales, to sales management, to president, to running a company that was existing. But the nice thing about not starting my first company from scratch is, you know, I learned a lot when I actually had to do that, right? All the things that it takes to actually start.
Yeah.
You know, and so I thought that I had learned a lot in my first experience, and I did, but then a few years later when I started my own, then of course, now you got the startup and where the money's coming from and not paying yourself and, you know, having the right products and services and building the right teams. But now I'm thinking about the accounting and the human resources and, you know, the right vendor relationships. So that second company was also automotive marketing. That one ended up selling.
So Scott, about how old were you when you left that company? Did you get bought out of it? What happened in that transition?
So that was, the deal with them is that I agreed to, and my friends, backstory, maybe too much for this, but my friends that I went to join started another division when I started running this company. It was in healthcare. So they were doing that. And I was left with the brother who they were kind of running away from anyway. We had some differences. So I actually negotiated with them to take my national sales manager and 6 months of pay. And then I was going to get out of there and start my own. So I was there for about 7 years. So again, I started 24-ish, and then I was there for 7 years. Then on to starting this next one, which we did in the my national sales manager's basement until his wife kicked us out of the house because we had like our first 6 employees in their house. But grew that very quickly. And then a vendor that had invested in us early on saw this team that we built and the things that we were doing on the phone and the sales process that we built. And they were a much larger organization that had an outside sales team. They didn't have an inside sales team. They wanted to bring us in the fold. They made us an offer. It was in the 08, 09 time period. I was going to run their whole automotive division. And then we closed the deal about 2 weeks before everything went to hell in a handbasket, including the automotive industry.
Oh, so man.
I was the luckiest guy in the world, but my earnout changed. And so what I did is renegotiated and with them and said, hey, I'll go on the outside. I'll take three people with me. I'll do your marketing for you under contract. That had me on the outside. I had no idea what was next. But I had a client and they were giving me money, and I used the money that they gave me to hire some other people. And I did just about anything that I could in the first year to pay the bills from a marketing standpoint. Yeah, I'll do your commercial. Sure, I'll build a website. Yeah, I'll make some calls. I'll do your direct mail. And then it really took us, that first 12 to 24 months to decide who we wanted to be when we grow up, when we were going to grow up. I went and got a couple of people I worked with in the past to join me. And, just after looking at what was out there and really zeroing in on what we did best, it was the beginning stages of the sales process. Just pulling the right data, putting the processes together, getting on the phone, doing the dirty work that nobody wants to do. Everyone hates it. Like, we would not be around if anyone liked the beginning stages of the sales process.
Yeah.
So we decided to really narrow in on what we did and who we were going to do it for. And that's when things really took off. And
okay, so Scott, your automotive was the industry you're kind of focused on.
In the two previous companies. Yeah.
Okay. So this company, 2008 and 2009, when you started this company, that was automotive also?
This is not automotive by design. What I wanted to make sure to do was design this organization where we'd be across multiple niches, working in every state, low retainers from clients, building to thousands of clients, super safe business, predictable growth, something I could put a math formula to and attract people to the company because it was safe and because of the growth potential they had within our organization. And, that's what's happened. We have some automotive full service agency business just because, that's what we had done in the past. But our business primarily is outbound and inbound lead generation. Everything that you would need to do, to warm up a prospect until they're ready to sit down and meet, we do that on an outsourced basis for a couple thousand companies around the country. And then we also have a creative division that builds video and sales decks and presentations, case studies, sell sheets that they can use in the sales process. We have a Salesforce implementation business that, a lot of our clients are using Salesforce, so we help them build out their instances and get the most out of their CRM investment. And then because we were doing so much recruiting ourselves, we also started a recruiting division. And we were starting to hear that our either prospects didn't want to come on board because they wanted to grow their business, but they couldn't find people to do the work. Or we had clients that got to a point, they grew their business, they couldn't find people. And, they're saying, hey, you've done a good job, but, we just can't find people to manage any more growth. So we solved that problem by offering our recruiting services externally as well. So cool. Those are the things that we do.
So it's cold calling, it's Salesforce consulting and recruiting consultative and business and recruiting business as well.
Yeah. And email marketing, we build websites, create content, manage social channels. So really I've got outreach, right? The cold calls and email and just trying to proactively pull people into the sales cycle. And then we've got inbound marketing where somebody's made the decision, they're out searching on Google and we're helping people, build rank and make sure that their website shows up over their competitors, once the person's actually made the decision. So outbound and inbound lead generation.
So selfishly, I'll look at our businesses, right? We're facility services. We, you know, paving is our biggest thing. And then we have a consulting company, that, you know, pavement consulting and roofing consulting company. It's a technology company. Those are two, probably our two biggest opportunities to grow. And then, and I say biggest because they're already good size enterprise value companies, and they've got a lot of strength behind them. Now we got these. Then we got these startup companies that are anywhere from a year to a few years old, maybe year to 5 years old, that are growing. And I've got, you know, in the last few weeks, we bought one company and we started another company. One is a pavement recycle. We recycle parking lots in place and use all the material there for the new pavement. Basically rejuvenating what's there with new liquid. And then we cap it with a final layer of fresh asphalt, right? And then we've got another company that's starting, investing a lot of money in starting a company now that's going to be a national company that does this RCC, which is roller compacted concrete. Again, these are huge differentiators in our industry that, you know, of 50,000 paving companies in the country, we will be one of 10 that do that RCC really well in the country. And one of one that does recycling in place of parking lots, right? So these are big differentiators that will add to our existing businesses to be able to really cover the gamut in our industry. How does a company like you guys take those differentiators and get them in front of the market? And I know you guys, it looks like you guys do, I think what you said, you guys do some work with facilities managers, facilities owners, and get roofing companies and all that in front of them, some paving, some roofing, and all the other things. Do you guys go as far as using those differentiators to kind of, you know, grab their interest first and all that, or kind of tell me, you know, kind of take me through your process?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'd like to compliment you because you are very keyed into what your differentiators are. And believe it or not, most of the people that onboard with us need help with that. Mm-hmm. You know, there are roofing contractors, you know, commercial roofing contractors that just really don't have that part defined. They just feel like they've got close competitors that they're always bidding against, and they haven't created those differentiators so that the story can be different. So mm-hmm. we have a 1 month implementation process. In that, we are defining target market, pulling data together, creating call guides, email messages, and really helping. We're either learning what their differentiators are to create messaging, or we're helping them create what their differentiators are.
Sure.
And some of them, like we have managed service providers, outsourced IT. And I'm a firm believer in that there's riches in the niches, and you're absolutely doing that. You're a walking example of that in creating businesses around facilities, right? So sometimes we even have to create their target market. Here's a managed service provider. They do cybersecurity and desktop support and infrastructure design. But, you know, we help them identify that they do indeed have more healthcare clients than other types of clients. And mm-hmm. why don't we set you apart that way? Let's pull data based on healthcare facilities, and let's build your messaging around healthcare facilities, and let's make you the pro in that area and really set you apart from your competitors. So there's a lot of work that we do in the first month.
When you're saying this, Scott, do you guys actually sometimes, you know, because the question I ask people a lot, right, is what's your niche, and it kind of 80-20 rule on everything I think about, right? But kind of 80-20 rule tells you that if you don't evaluate it on an annual basis, you're not on top of it. You know, 20% of your customers probably deliver 80% of the value of your business, right? Whether it's, you know, profitability, whether it's duplicatable, you know, scaling opportunities, whatever it is, right? 20%, very common, or less, delivers 80% of the value of the business. And if you're conscious of that, right, you're going after that 20% to increase it to hopefully 80% of your business that will, in the long run, deliver the same value and you can scale. How do you look at that? And tell me how you might guide a customer when you're on top of what you're doing. I'm sure you got to think about that every day.
Well, first, just a comment on that, because I know that that's reality. By design, we try to not have our business set up that way. So we've been very strategic in picking 20 different focus industries and running our sales enablement processes in every state. So although we may have a state that's larger than another, we do business in every state in the country. We've spread our risk across 20 niches, and you know, everybody pays a small retainer fee. So we don't have any customers that are even close to 1% of our revenue, which makes it very safe and makes it a nice math problem in growth going forward. I am trying to teach our folks that when we're getting with businesses, because a lot of them, quite frankly, are not national in scope like you are, and maybe they're not going after, you know, bigger ticket clients that can add $10 or $15 million in revenue at once. A lot of them are local, and we're just teaching them how to specialize in a niche and teaching them how to spread their business risk. So if they have their client spread, their revenue spread, and then we can help them build a predictable sales pipeline, then they can be one of those businesses that survives.
Right. Awesome. When you think about your customers, what percentage of your customers are national, Scott? What percentage are regional?
I would say that.
Yeah, just 70, a guess.
70, yeah, I would say about 70% of them are marketing locally, not nationally. Okay. And with those folks, we're doing more of an account based, you know, very strategic approach in their local markets. Mm-hmm. And then I will say the ones that are national, we even try to break it down, right? Even though somebody has a national approach, if you're hitting the entire US, I can still be more impactful running campaigns in a particular local market or a niche.
Sure.
As opposed to blasting to the masses.
Right. Now, do you also recommend that your customers, or do you guys get involved also like in the kind of the industry conferences and stuff like that? When I think about like our industry, there's conferences that we participate in that house our customers, right? That our customers pay attention to and get engaged in, right? And we probably do an average job at best at that because everybody's so busy, right? Taking care of the business we have. But do you guys get involved in that at all?
Not necessarily planning for them. We ourselves get involved in industry specific conferences. So sure. We would put ourselves in front of roofing contractors or mechanical contractors. I will say that in these niches that we specialize in, we've got industry specific teams, and our account manager tries to bring value from, you know, what different roofing contractors around the country are saying, the small guy in Iowa, the larger guy in the Bronx. And if you're joining our network, you're getting that.
Sure.
Like you're getting other than what we do for a living, you're getting some of these other business practices from the network of people in niches that we serve.
That's awesome. Okay. I you know, Salesforce is, we use it also, but I mean, and I want to be like Salesforce to my customers. It's like so addictive, right? We continue to grow with Salesforce every year. When I look at how much we're spending, I'm always like, damn, do we have to keep on cranking up the cost of Salesforce, right? And my team's like, oh yeah, we're getting benefit from it. It's working out, and we're, you know, we they do, you know, check the ROI on it on an annual basis to say it's working well and all that. But I know there's, you know, we constantly get other organizations that come in and say, hey, we're good or better than them. We're going to save you, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, whatever. In your opinion, is there some good stuff out there? I don't have to mention it now because it's your Salesforce, you know, represent a consultant, I think. But you know, are they Are there good, are there big competitors to them? And if so, are you consultants to other products besides Salesforce?
So we are working Salesforce, HubSpot, Dynamics, Microsoft Dynamics, and Zoho. But Salesforce is the best. I have 550 individual licenses here, and we use it in every area of our business. So I've built what we call a A player score. So it's tied into a org chart, and everybody from me down or across has a real-time 24/7 A player score with all their key metrics, their KPIs. But we do accounting in it, you know, human resources, sales, account management, operations, mm-hmm. product development. We love it. And that's how we got into it. We were using it so deep that there was a Salesforce rep locally that sent one of their customers over to get some advice. And then we had a guy here that was a passion. So we created a separate company, actually, that he owns 30% of. And it's growing quickly because there's just so many people are using Salesforce. They buy it and they don't know what the hell to do with it once they have it to get an ROI out of it. So it's fun work.
Cool. Yeah, no, we're using it for a lot of different things. As you're saying, project management, technology development, doing a lot with it. That's why the price goes up, but you know, it is a product that, you know, we anything we do, we charge all our leaders to really understand the ROI and everything we spend money on. Right. And there's nobody's saying, you know, get rid of it. It's not worth it. So it's not going any soon. Right. So when you think of recruiting, Scott, I mean, that's a big part of business, especially today, right? When I had a leadership conference in Nashville here a few weeks ago, it was awesome. We had about 60 people, 40 were our leaders and businesses and, you know, CEOs, presidents, general managers. And then we had some spouses and significant others that came along, and we had a great time. But, you know, biggest thing we heard from our leaders was, you know, hey, we're going to grow a lot. We're going to grow at least, we think, 400-500% in all of our companies together on average, 400-500% in the next 5 to 7 years, we think, right? And so with that, the biggest challenge is, you know, finding great people, finding those leaders that are going to carry the torch further, right? And finding the people that meet our core values, our culture, right? That like our culture, meet our core values. And that's what I heard over and over again. And, you know, we think we're doing really well. We've got amazing people, amazing culture, but, you know, that will be the biggest challenge in the future. So the recruiting thing, it becomes such an important aspect of our businesses now, right? In your opinion, where do you see it? How do you help companies like us? And tell us about that.
Well, I see more and more companies transitioning to using somebody on the outside. And that's happened in a lot of areas, right? In accounting and IT and, you know, marketing, just business functions where it's clear that there's an expertise on the outside and regulations and law, just things you got to be considerate of. Today, it is way more competitive. People are leaving jobs for more money quickly. Like, it is so hard for a company internally to stay on top of the activity necessary to have a pipeline of really good people. And you can't just put an ad out. And we were just in this spot where we're making tons of calls and we're interacting on LinkedIn and we're doing heavy outreach activity on our own to recruit. And I think that was the difference maker, is that we were already set up to do a ton of activity. And there's a lot of businesses that are operating daily and don't have the time or the money to build the team necessary. And they don't have access to the technology to be able to go do a good job from a recruiting standpoint. I think more people will outsource it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're in it.
I agree. No, it makes perfect sense. And I have seen where recruiting has gotten to be more and more competitive. It used to be, you know, if you're going to hire a recruiter, it's going to cost you a big chunk of that first year's salary. I see where that, you know, people have been more streamlined with technology today and the cost to recruit, or the cost to hire a recruiting firm. So I see movement in that where you're right. It's going to be more and more outsourcing because it just makes better sense. Let the people that do it their best at it. When you look at your culture to grow, where were you? Okay, you started with how many people? When? Okay, with 2000. Okay,
'09.
Okay, how many people do you start with, and where are you at? I know about where you're at today. Tell us about that growth and those transition periods where you went from a few of you to dozens of you to hundreds of you and on and on and on. Tell us a bit about the growing pains that you saw that you got through and other people could think about as they're striving to grow.
Yeah. So we started with three. We're just over 550 now. We're not growing as quickly in number of folks just because of technology that's available, right? I mean, without certain technology, we very well could be 700 or 800 people at this point, but our people growth hasn't been happening as fast because of the, changes and things that are out there. Other than COVID and one other year where we discontinued a line of service that we were providing because it was more project-based, we've grown by, 20% plus every year. So we really have had pretty consistent growth since the beginning. And this year we, have a minimum goal of reaching over 70 million and a stretch goal of 80, and we want to be to $100 million by the end of next year.
So think about, you've only grown like 20,000% since the beginning, right? 20,000%. So you think about that, right? 20%, 30% growth here. I'm sure you probably grew maybe 80, 100% when you're very small, right? But overall, you think about your average growth of maybe 25% a year, whatever it was, that compounded growth creates amazing growth over time. If you can stick to it and you've got people that can carry the torch and you're not losing people every year or losing customers every year, right? It only happens when you're a strong relationship builder with as far as customer wise and team wise, right? Like you said, mentioned a little bit ago, people walk so easy, right? I mean, people jump around job to job. We're looking at resumes and we're looking at history of people we're looking to hire. So often they've been to 10 different places in 10 years, right? I'm just not crazy about hiring somebody in my team same way. If that's their history, they could be great people, but they could be great people that just haven't found their way and aren't satisfied ever or are always searching for the dollar instead of the culture, right? So we definitely focus on people that want to be in a place that has great culture, paid well, because we're going to pay well, but you better have that culture. When I think about culture, core values wise, where do you guys sit? And initially in the beginning, kind of, do you have any core values of that lean, mean, small team you had? And then as you've grown, what do they become today?
We were lean, mean, didn't have a lot going on other than some ideas in the beginning, for sure. It was a little bit harder to get people to join the team. And thank God we did have some really strong players that bought into what we wanted to create. With them, we have created, in my opinion, an amazing culture. It takes everyone. Some of the pillars of our culture is we believe in growth. It's at our core. And, so an individual wants to continue to develop. If they don't, they go somewhere else. And we want to be able to attract someone early on in their career, keep them here. And we're super dedicated to best practices on a weekly basis, continuing education every single month, moving people to different jobs to give them more know-how It's just, we're really, really going hard on the growth of people, because the more talented folks that we have, the more they grow, the more that we can really help our clients grow. Everything that we do is kind of centered around that. Yeah, we have that environment that you walk into where, you know, everyone's wearing the gear, and we have the games, and we have give back days, and we're charitable, and there's contests and monthly themes and food trucks and all that stuff. But I think that if you were to ask our folks, the most important thing is that they're continuing to learn. I think that's what's at the center of it all.
So no stated core values, really. I mean, growth kind of covers it all, in my opinion. I mean, when you think of continuous development, education, when you think of, you know, moving people job to create more value in themselves, growing their value, right? Growth can cover it all.
Don't get me wrong. We have a mission statement. We have a growth creed. We have vision statements around people, customers, and business. We've got A player characteristics for individual contributors and trust characteristics for leaders. So we're pretty defined as to the, you know, how we want to live. Mm-hmm. But as you said, it is all centered towards, you know, the internal and external growth of a human. And then we believe that we're in business to impact lives through sales pipelines, if you can believe that. But as necessary as that is for a business to thrive, it makes sense, right? We're creating jobs, saving jobs.
Impact lives through what?
Through sales pipelines. Through predictable sales pipelines, so that our business partners can not only be safe, but, you know, have path towards growth, which means they can add jobs and impact their local economies.
I love it. Impact lives through sales pipelines. I mean, it's got a great ring to it, and it makes great sense, right? If we can't run businesses effectively if we don't continue to grow our sales, right? And our relationships. We've got a company right now another company I didn't tell you about, that I'll be very, very transparent here. My CEO may not like it, right? But we've been growing organically because we've got a great product. It's called PipeView America is the name of the company. And Nick's been on the show earlier on, like when he was pretty small, but leading the industry in a big way. We're like five times the size we were back then. And so he's doing a great job. But we've continually grown through organic growth by serving our customers, and our customers having such a big need that they continue to just grow us, right? I've been telling him all along, and I don't want to say that I've had a solution, because I haven't found it for him, but that he needs to think forward and more vision towards sales, right? And Nick was like, yeah, you're right. But he never really had the need to, because he kept growing, right? So I can't blame him. He served his customers amazingly well. He's got a great product, and he's grown this business to be a great company, a national company now. And what we do is we put robots underground to televise and condition a pipe for gas companies across the country. And our biggest value to the gas industry is we find gas leaks that cause explosions, right? Using these high-speed robots with these complex camera systems. Really, it's cool business. But Nick all along, for the I think it's about 9 years old, the company, really has grown to over $100 million value company today. But he did it so far with very, very little sales. Him, myself, our sales team, kind of just spreading the word about this business. Well, now, in the last few months, you had a couple customers that cut back on their budgets for their own regional budgetary reasons. And it's had a big impact on his profitability for the year so far, and it's going to have an impact on his profitability for the rest of the year, right? Because he started in a hole that he never had before. Well, he hasn't had it for the last 4 or 5 years anyway. And so the value of the business actually got. We look at enterprise value in everything we do. I mean, it sounds like selfish to some people, but when you grow enterprise value, it's because you're growing the quality of your customers and the quality of your team, right? Right. And so
The only way you grow enterprise value is taking really good care of people, serving people really well, right? And so when we look at enterprise value, this company is just continually growing and growing. And that's what Nick is incentivized on as the CEO and the leaders of that company. But again, he's found out what sales mean right now. And he's going to be a guy I'm going to have you talk to, because he has not had the vision of continued selling, right? He's paying the price right now in a stagnant valuation that we have today that might last for the rest of the year. And so again, he's a perfect person for you to talk to. So I'm gonna hook you up with Nick, and you can talk about what you do, because you could think about this market. Scott, it's simply calling gas companies across the country, right? On gas companies, because there's nowhere in the country we can't set up and provide crews and technology to, right? So either way, but it's a perfect example of you better have a vision, a clear vision of your sales, you know, your sales growth and how you're going to grow sales, right? And if you don't have that, you're not protecting the value, the interest of your stockholders. You're not protecting the interest of the families that all rely on that company. So, I mean, you saying impact lives through the sales pipeline, that's a great statement, because his business is feeling the negative impact by not building that pipeline strong enough.
You know, it's interesting that you're bringing this up. COVID hits and the world's in disarray. And if you could imagine, we're reaching out to sell our services and we're talking to people that might even be shut down, right? Mm-hmm. And we had to flip the conversation. It's like, well, what now? We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if you're going to keep all of your customers. Some of them may go out of business. You know, what does it look like if that happens? You know, how much business can you lose? Do you have a predictable sales pipeline? Do you know how you're going to replace customers or how you'll continue growth or be okay or be safe? And we ended up growing a little bit in COVID and really proving out the business model and really proving the point that, like what you're saying, that you could be going along and things are fine and you're really not doing anything about it because you're doing good work and you're growing a little bit every year. But then when something comes along and smacks you in the face, you better have a pipeline.
100%.
Yeah.
And I think you probably, you think, and you could sell yourself, and I'm sure you do already, right? Sell yourself on, again, when I look at enterprise value, if you don't have a consistent sales pipeline, if you have a cyclical business that you can't get out of because you're not selling through the cycles, right? You have a reduced value in that business. If you have a business that's consistently growing, right, consistently going through the economic cycles like a machine, right? You can get a heck of a lot more for that company in a sale. Not that we all build businesses to sell, in my opinion, Scott. I mean, I build every business we have to have great enterprise value that would be, you know, really desirable for people to buy. Now, I've sold very few companies. I've sold a few, right? But again, I if you don't build your business to be desirable for the outside to buy, you're not going to be building a business that's desirable for people to be within. Your customers do business with, right?
So I agree.
Some people, like I talk to small businesses, they'll say, Raymond, what do I care about enterprise value? I'm never going to sell, right? I'm never going to sell. Well, if you don't care about your enterprise value, then you don't care about how you're treating your teammates, how you're treating your customers, how you're differentiating to be the best you can be, right? And man, that's so fun, right? Great.
I think you're hitting it on the head, because the only way your enterprise value goes up, like you said, is if your revenue is consistently going up. And if your revenue is consistently going up, then the people that are working in your environment have a path for growth. And there's just only so many people that are going to stay somewhere for 30 years and do the same thing every day without having growth ahead. Those days are gone. And so they're hand in hand.
Exactly. Now you're an exciting business buddy, and I want to make sure that we're in touch, and I'll put you, your team, whoever it is you want, in front of some of my leaders, because we have a big void in doing what you do. We're blessed that we have so much differentiation that we're not experiencing some of our businesses a lack of growth, but it could be a heck of a lot better. It could be even better in many cases as long as we can hire the right people. So yeah. I'm excited to do that. It's fun. How about you know, you and I, I mean, you're a little younger than me, right? But you're doing the same thing that I've done. As an entrepreneur, when I see opportunity, right, a customer has a problem that I can solve, I started, like, we kind of service that problem with another kind of another division or service line or whatever. And when it becomes something that I believe can be scaled, or my team and I believe can be scaled, then we're going to start a business, right? We're going to spin out a business. And Scott, I've done this over 32 or 34 times. I've started businesses now in the last 4 years, and we're going to do a few this year. We're going to buy one or two this year. So we're kind of going at a bigger pace. We only have 13 companies now because we sold some, shut some down over the years and stuff. But either way, it's fun when you can solve a customer's problem, and then know you have somebody passionate about solving that problem that has an opportunity to be a general manager, then CEO and owner of that solution, right? That business, and grow things, right? I mean, you're doing very much the same. When I hear about the stuff you're doing with the Salesforce consulting business, the recruiting business, right? Entrepreneurs, we have so much opportunity. If we can solve our customers' problems, and we love our customers, and we love our teammates, and we love solving problems, there's no stopping us, in my opinion.
Yeah. I love how you say, I only have 13 companies.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be
good for you.
Yeah, no, we're going to be growing a lot. We're going to be, we've never been really in acquisition mode, but right now, because of the opportunities we have, we're going to start acquiring companies. And that's another thing you probably can do. You probably do it already. If there's 50,000 companies that do what I do across the country, right? We're one of the top two, three biggest in the country when it comes to paving parking lots. It's kind of a mom and pop industry overall, right? Yep. So we're not that big, but we're one of the biggest. Now, when you think about that, 50,000 companies, and of that, probably a couple thousand of those companies are perfect targets for us to acquire, with them, partner with them, let them keep some of the stock and grow them fast, right? With the technology we have. Do you have a method to do that as well, to be able to call on companies to acquire or partner with?
Yeah. So we just 2 years ago acquired a sizable email marketing company. We are in discussions now about what would be next and whether we're going to do it on our own or, you know, raise a little money. We've always done it, you know, everything on our own up to this point, but you know, we're looking at digital marketing and social. We're looking at some data, and then of course, if we can tack on from any of these Salesforce partners or any recruiting, you know, there's a lot of people that have started recruiting companies that are retiring or they're small and they haven't figured out how to blow it up. So we're kind of same mindset as you are right now.
And you could also be, again, your call centers could probably be directed towards businesses that are in an acquisition pool, let's say, that we put together, I'm guessing, right? Yeah. I mean, you can ask the right questions and find out if they're interested in selling, right? And something else that we'd be interested in the future. So I love it. I love it. Scott, tell me about your family. Any kids, wife, kids, what?
Divorced. I do have two kids. My daughter just finished her first year at the University of Arizona studying psychology. And my son just finished his junior year at a local high school here in St. Louis, got his senior year ahead, wants to join his sister at the University of Arizona. And I don't know. I love being an entrepreneur. So there's some level of flexibility so I can go do the things, right? Be at the soccer games, watch the track meets.
Yeah.
They're at the kind of the center of everything for me. They're my main motivators.
Yeah, it really drives right after you have kids. You had kids young, like I did, and it's really a great way. I mean, either way, it's great. Whatever path people choose as far as when they want to have a family, but having them young as I did and you did, it's kind of cool because it puts an extra drive in you to want to succeed. You want to build something so you can support them at the best level possible, right? And yeah. I tell my friends, you know, have kids early if you can, because if you love being an entrepreneur, you're gonna have a fire in your butt that you didn't have before once you have those kids that you know you want to live for and support, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's cool. And then is St. Louis where you're at all the time? You have a passion for any other areas of the country that you'd like to go to?
St. Louis is where I am all the time. I love to travel, period. I don't know. I did it a ton in the past in the previous businesses. I've been to pretty much every sizable city and enjoy most of them. Love to travel abroad as well. You know, I don't think St. Louis will be my home forever. Been thinking more recently about where a second place to visit might be, but I enjoy getting out of St. Louis and exploring. And
yeah, St. Louis is a beautiful town. I always like going to St. Louis. Chicago, I think, is a great town. We've got a lot of issues there, of course. I finally pulled the trigger, and I'm 7 months in Naples, Florida now. And I love, it's like paradise down there. I'm telling you, it's not cheap. It's expensive. Its prices have gone through the roof down there, but the atmosphere is such that, boy, you feel like you're in paradise when you're there. It's a very free feeling. And in Naples, Florida,
it's a city where I look at homes online probably once a week.
Yeah. When you ever go down there, I've got a couple places you could stay. I know a couple people down there that are great real estate people, but that know it really well. My girlfriend knows it inside and out. She grew up down there and then moved up by us in her teens, but always has gone down there because she loves it and she still loves it. But either way, you know, she knows all the pockets of value still, because there's not. Most of these places have already been discovered and they're expensive as heck. And so she knows all the places where, you know, it'll continue to have upside. She thinks anyway, and I kind of agree with her, but we've got one,
that's good.
We got one remodel where my son and I are doing together down there. And it'll be a great investment for the two of us to have fun with. But either way, yeah, Naples is a place where it's going to continue to grow. Just because the atmosphere of freedom and weather and everything else, right? So if you ever get down there, you ever look and you can call me on that too, because I can tell you where I think the best subdivisions are and all that. So
yeah, I'll do it for sure.
Okay, so Christopher, let's bring Christopher in. Chris, let's got any questions for Scott?
Oh yeah, I wrote down a bunch of questions. I wish we had all day. Man, you're a wealth of knowledge and insights.
Thank you.
A fellow marketing entrepreneur. So I am curious, how did you decide on your niche? It sounds like you guys have a number of them. A lot of my mentors are like, oh, you need to niche down. Like they say, like, there's riches and niches. But I was like, I don't want to like limit myself. Like how did you guys pull the trigger and decide on which niches to serve?
Yeah. So, you know, early on, I think I had mentioned that, you know, you're trying to pay the bills, of course, and you are spread across multiple niches. Early on, we started looking at where we had more than one client and if we were doing a good job. picking a niche to us means that we can either help someone get a project with enough margin to pay for our services at the end of the year, or we can help somebody bring on enough MRR that, you know, where the margin, the lifetime value of the customer, they can see the ROI. That's a big deal. People don't have much patience for past a year if they're not seeing the return come back. So we'll get web leads or get referrals. We'll be doing that work. We'll notice, hey, that's a niche that we perform well in. We'll yank it out, put it in our sales enablement team, develop sequences around that niche, you know, make sure that we've got the first couple of customers, we're doing a good job. We're, you know, we've got testimonial videos, all the things, and then we just kind of model it out, bring it over to our sales team. And then we attack the top 100 markets in the country and work on an exclusive basis. So once we figure out we can do a niche, you know, and if we're ready for the next one, we yank it out of that other bucket, if you will, put it through sales enablement and onto our sales team, and then go on the attack.
Well, they're very, very systematized. It sounds like very, very data-driven. That's awesome. Cool. So I know we're coming towards the end of our time. So I'll go over my nuggets of wisdom here. One, the sooner you can duplicate yourself, the better. Key into your differentiators, your riches and niches. That's a great one. Do business in every state and spread risk across many niches and industries. I think that's extremely valuable in our incredibly turbulent times. Recruit team members who value good culture. Look at enterprise value in everything you do. And if it can be scaled, it's time to start a business. Scott, where can our audience find out more about you?
You can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'd love to chat with you there. We are on, you know, pretty much any platform where you can find a podcast at The Grow Show, Business Growth Stories from the Front Lines. Love to have you engage and listen and share there. And our website is abstractmg.com, and you can take a look at our services. And if there's anything that we could help you out with, we'd love to do that.
Awesome. So the things I picked up too, Chris, many of the same things you did, but you know, you're all about growth. Just like the name on your show that you have, right? You're all about growth. And with growth, right, there's so many things you can put under that, right? When it comes to continuous development, the education you guys continue to provide, right? You talk about moving people around and you know, creating value as people learn all the roles and all the jobs, you know, the value in individuals that you create, right? And then you look at then the growth, right? Then the growth that you create with I love that, you know, you said impact lives through sales pipelines, right? Impacting lives through sales pipelines. I mean, there's a lot of people don't get that fact, right? That when you have a great sales pipeline, a continuous one, you're impacting so many lives in a positive way. It's incredible. And I can go into deep as you can in that, right? And impact, you know, besides growth, impact. Are you making an impact in the world? Are you making an impact on the industries you're serving and the businesses you're serving? Because if you are, things are going to be really, really, really good and really, really profitable in the long run. I like all that. And then, you know, when we think about also things that you mentioned testimonials briefly, but we, in my opinion, suck at using testimonials. I was with many customers last week. This week, Monday, we had a big golf outing, and a lot of our customers show up for that. And I talked to many customers. There are nothing but amazing stories of how we've impacted them positively as we serve them as customers. And I'm like, man, these need to be testimonials, right? We do a terrible job of using those. People need to understand the value of those testimonials, especially when you've got, you know, great customers tied to those testimonials, right? With working for great companies, right? We do a lousy job of that. And
Can I add a note there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, first of all, it's the number one thing that our sales people want as a resource, to be able to share stories. So it's not just them telling the story about how we're going to help, but it shouldn't be surprising, I guess, but it has been how the people that are doing the hard, like, so let's say one of our customers is giving a testimonial, you know, the people that are doing the hard work here, like, they're getting noticed through that. We didn't start doing customer testimonial videos and case studies for that reason. We should have, but then that really has been the more important thing that came out of it, is that people feel like their work's valued and they're doing a good job and they get to see the results of their hard work. Like, I don't think people think about that part of it.
Right. Yeah, the value of that's extremely strong, as you said. And then the last thing you mentioned was, you guys together as a team, you guys have give back stuff, or you're doing stuff to give back to the community. That Monday, the last Monday, 2 days ago, we had our golf outing where we raised a bunch of money for our foundation that gives to children, disadvantaged, and veterans, right? Three different major causes that we give, we invest a ton of time, talent, and money into every year. But again, that the giving you talked about, in my opinion, 100%. I mean, if you give, you know, a large chunk of dough every year to causes you believe in, of your profits, and you know, we give 2 to 5% of our profits to the foundation, and we raise a lot of money every year, a little bit outside with this golf outing. But I'm very, very confident that our culture is stronger as we have a more giving culture, as we're doing more, not just, you know, as we're doing more outside our businesses, giving back to the communities. We're attracting and keeping people that like to give. Those same givers are helping the person next to them in the office, staying late with another teammate, right? The same givers are the ones that want to, you know, overserve our customers and solve their problems, right? So yep. I really believe in, you know, what you said on the giving side. We need to continue to think about how do we do that well, because if we do that, we're delivering amazing impact, not just to the community we're serving, but also to our teammates and our customers. So good stuff, buddy. Well, hey,
thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for everything, Scott. Thanks for being on our show today. And you're doing some amazing things that we're going to follow, and we're going to introduce you. I want to introduce you or whoever your team is after this show. Let's touch base and by sell and figure out who should talk to who in our organizations. Okay.
That'd be wonderful. Appreciate it. And I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks, buddy. So, hey, thanks everybody for listening today. Thanks, Chris, for producing this. And until next time, we'll see you again on Ditch Digger CEO. See ya.
If you enjoy this show, please share with anyone else you think will find value here. And please go to our website, ditchdiggerceo.com, for show notes, links, video clips, and more nuggets of entrepreneurial wisdom. Don't forget to follow me on social media at Ditch Digger CEO.
Cans, paper routes, mowing lawns, careless hands. Daddy had 6 kids to raise. Factory and not a neighbor heard my name. Learn by example, not the words you said. Watched his every move and followed his footsteps. Pick and shovel. working.